Hi, my name is Sherry Rasmussen. I am the president of GCIU Local 12N in Providence, Rhode Island.
What is the factory?
We're a newspaper. I have 5 shops worth of newspapers and 11 shops of commercial work. Newspaper being the Providence Journal, the Worcester Telegram and Gazette, Chicopee, which is Dow Jones, and New York Times.
My name is Walter Drakeford, Jr., and I am GCIU President of Local 713S, employee of the Government Printing Office, in which we does all the congressional work for Congress, and we are their employer. We work directly for them.
All right.
And I'm Stephen Aldridge, Secretary Treasurer for Local 767M in Seattle, Washington, and Portland, Oregon. We represent about 1,100 members working in about 30, 35 different shops, including the Seattle Times, Post Intelligencer, Morning News Tribune, Everett Herald, GAC, which is a large high-end commercial printer, lots of little commercial shops, and a few specialty shops.
Okay, fantastic. So you all are here from a variety of places, and you're here in Urbana for a summer school that the Graphic Communications International Union is doing to teach your leaders, to educate people about what goes on in the union and how to make the union do things better. Can someone tell me basically just some basic information about the GCIU, how big it is, how old it is?
It's about 100,000 members across the United States and Canada. Printers were some of the first workers to form unions, and they formed our union in the 19th century. Was initially one of the strongest unions because printing was a highly specialized skill, and so the people who learned that skill were able to do a lot to control their work, sort of like, you know, doctors control who gets to practice medicine, and by doing that control their industry and their wages and their benefits. And printers did something similar in the 19th and early 20th century. Initially, there were 5 or 6 different unions in the printing industry. There was a union that only represented people who printed newspapers. There was another union that only represented people who printed, did commercial printing, like your magazines and your advertisement. An additional union that only represented people who did what we call specialty printing, boxes, cartons, packaging. And another union that only represented bindery workers, which are the people who put the printed material together and make books out of it, bind the back end, staple it together, and do things like that, do the folding. Over time, all those unions merged together to create economies of scale that allowed for better representation of members and better use of members' dues money, getting members better return for what they invested in their union.
All right, so it's developed and it's evolved in the way that many other unions have developed and evolved, and now here we are today, and we've got these leaders who are learning to take care of their union. Let's start in with what some of the bargaining issues are that you face. I mean, one of the most important things that unions do, of course, is negotiate a contract for their members to expand their rights and or to establish their rights and to cope with changes in the workplace. What are some of the things that are currently difficult issues or big challenges that you all are facing in collective bargaining?
I'd have to say our biggest is our medical co-pays, our health care. The corporates just want the working class to pay more and more of their health care, and also pay increases. The members are looking for some sort of pay increase every time a contract comes up. Again, I would have to say the biggest thing is health care.
In terms of salaries, do you remember? Are your members conscious of all the, you know, the economy is supposedly booming and everyone's making so much more money, and are they saying, you know, we've got to make some more money too, or is it just what's driving that?
I think that's just any type of industry. Everybody's afraid of the way the economy's going right now. Sure, I imagine it depends on which industry you're working in. Again, you got the bindery workers. You start at the bottom and you work your way up to the top. Again, I imagine a pressman in a newspaper probably makes a little bit more than a person in a bindery factory. Again, it depends on which area you're working in.
So it's just the age-old bread-and-butter issue of wages, got to make some money. And then, of course, you mentioned the health insurance. Now, that's obviously, as the health insurance costs come up, employers want to take more of that money out of your members' pockets, and your job then is to defend your members and not let that happen. Does the international, and this is a problem that I've seen come up in pretty much every union that is out there, in every workplace that's out there, is just rising health insurance costs. Is your union doing anything in particular, your international, to help address that?
Yeah, one of the things that we're really focused on is healthcare issues, though, and the secretary treasurer of our international union comes out of Canada. Being from Canada, is very familiar with the benefits of the healthcare system there, where everyone has healthcare. They don't have to negotiate the basic healthcare benefits each time their contract opens, and they don't have to make decisions about whether to take decreased wages and make the compromises in their material well-being necessary when you take a wage cut in order to maintain your health care benefits. Just in the last issue of our international newsletter, there was an article from the Secretary Treasurer talking about the importance of getting some sort of nationalized health care plan in this country, similar to that in every other industrialized country in the world, and the damage that is done to our members and all working people by having to worry constantly about whether they're going to have the ability to provide for their health and their children's health, and what sacrifices they're going to have to make on an individual and family basis in order to maintain the benefits when they do have access to some level.
Mm-hmm. And within the, y'all are members of the AFL-CIO as well, the American Federation of Labor, Congress of Industrial Organizations, and as 100,000 members, you do have certain political strength, national political strength, but within the AFL you've got more, it's 14 million members or so. Is there an effort that you all are aware of to have the AFL make national health care an issue that Congress will address?
Well, I'd like to say this one thing about the unions, they all deal politically, you know what I'm saying? We deal directly with Capitol Hill, you know what I'm saying? And you know union, AFL-CIO backs the Democrats, you know what I'm saying? You know, and those are our buddies on Capitol Hill. So that's who we work through, you know, trying to get the cost down on health and wages up. That's who we deal directly with.
AFL-CIO was one of the strongest supporters of the attempts to provide universal health care coverage in the early 90s. Put a lot of member resources into educating the public and union members specifically about the different proposals that were being considered in an effort to lay the groundwork to help get that legislation passed. And I think union members probably were some of the most disappointed people when the lies put forward by the insurance industry through Harry and Louise basically destroyed that effort to provide for the health care needs of everyone in our country.
Okay. Also, there are other sorts of political things that are coming down on people. And Walter, you work for the GPO, the Government Printing Office, and recently there was a news story about how Republicans in Congress want to close down the GPO. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, that is something that has been happening down through the years. When the Republican Party comes in, it always a thing of reduction. Now they got the thing where we are the largest printing shop, and we are the public printer. And what they're doing now, they are trying to have each agency now to take and withdraw from GPO, which we come under Title 44, and they want to zip that where they can go out to outside shops or wherever and get the work printed. But they have done that before, and all this stuff, it costs the taxpayers more money, and it ends up coming back to GPO to be done all over again. So it's not nothing strange, you know what I'm saying? It's something that has been happening through my transition to GPO for about 35 years.
Mm-hmm. How many people work for GPO?
I started there 35 years ago. We had 9,500 on the roster. That was including your bookstores all throughout the country. We now have 3,200 people, and that includes the bookstores that we still have now remaining open.
And you represent what, 1,500 in your local?
And my local, I have 1,200 in my local.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so when they're talking about closing down GPO, it's talking about making those 1,200 people go off and find different jobs.
1,200 now. Okay, what happens, we have what you call 13 different unions in GPO. That's from brake masonry all the way down, you know. And what we do is we joint bargain. We have a joint council of unions, you know what I'm saying, in which the chairman, he represents, and we have what you call joint council meetings every month, you know what I'm saying. And we live around what we need and what we're looking for and everything, and this is how we operate. So that would be including everybody. That's out of the 3,200, you know what I'm saying, 50. But it would be done, and the way we got down through where we're at now, we're done through attrition. People retired, new technology, you know what I'm saying. They don't hire body for body, you know what I'm saying, you know, and that's the way it's been done down through the years. Nobody never lost a job because of, you know, new technology coming in, you know what I'm saying. What we do, once someone go, maybe out of three, they may hire two, you know. And this is what we're expecting to happen this time with this new public printer coming in.
And the importance of the GPO was recently demonstrated by the duplication of your services. You set up a new shop after September 11th. Talk about that just a second.
Yes. What happened, you know, since the 911, and we are the primary user for Capitol Hill, we had to set up what you call a satellite area, in which we got that set up out in Laurel, Maryland, in which if should this 911 hit GPO, we will still be able to operate, you know what I'm saying, on the same standard we operate from North Capitol 8th Street, where the big house is now. So this was something other that we came about and Congress thought about, you know what I'm saying, at the time that things must go on, you know. So this is what we have set up out there.
How about technology? Sherry, you negotiate contracts for, or you help negotiate contracts for several different locals. Are technology issues important right now? Is the workplace, the printing changing, and is that something you have to think a lot about?
Well, right now, I've been in the industry about 10 years now. I've been the president for the last 3 years. The plant that I work in, the technology is pretty much up to date. We have the big three flexo presses inside of the plant. We have two smaller plants, one in Woonsocket, Rhode Island, and another one in Fall River, Massachusetts, which are offset presses. Again, they are smaller. They are, I'd have to say, kind of historic, but there is supposed to be new presses coming in, new to the members, but probably not brand new. Technology is changing every day. They're looking at possibly new plate rooms, plate machines, what we print the paper with. Again, we use a template and we put it on the press and run up the press and it just prints a paper. I mean, not that easy, but again, the general idea. Technology changes every day, and I think that's in any type of business. We do have the training. The companies are very good with that. I thank God for that, that they keep us trained. And we just like to, just stay up with everything.
Mm-hmm. Steve, what about you? What are the challenges that you face when a new technology is introduced into one of your shops?
Well, new technologies typically displace workers. It takes fewer people to do electronic prepress work than it took people to put a something together on a light table and then to take it through the photo process to develop a plate. Now what three or four people used to do to get it ready for the press is typically done by one or two people, and they do it in, you know, 25% of the time that the three or four people used to spend to do it. We see presses coming online that are much easier to run, and people are displaced from that. Instead of having, you know, four or five people running a press, employers will try and get the work done by two or three people. The manufacturers will frequently try and convince an employer that if they buy this press, which costs, you know, several million dollars, that they'll be able to run it with fewer people than can actually run the press. So that sets up the basis for a conflict right there. But in general, we see a transition away from providing as many people with a living wage that this industry used to provide. And we see that trend happening in many other industry too. It's of great concern in an economy that's based on working people having jobs to support their families, where those jobs are constantly decreasing and the new ones that are creating are frequently paying less money. That concerns us greatly.
Well, let's talk about organizing quickly here. If people want to join the union, if they want to join the GCIU, what kinds of places would they be working in where the GCIU would be the appropriate union for them to join?
Our members work in newspapers. Our members work in commercial print shops. Our members work in specialty print shops. Our members do electronic prepress work and design. We also have members working in some pretty diverse areas. We have one local that represents people who make plastic bottles. We have another local that represents people who do metal engraving. But anything loosely related to communicating with graphic materials, either directly in communicating or printing that material, that's the bulk of our membership.
And so then, if say that people listening work in a place like that that you've described and they want to begin talking about bargaining as a group of people instead of bargaining as isolated individuals, they want collective bargaining, they want a union, mm-hmm. How do they go about doing that?
Well, the first thing I would encourage them to do is to contact a union organizer. Employers are greatly concerned about employees changing their status from being employed at will to putting themselves in a position where the employer has to bargain with them collectively about every decision made on how they're compensated and how they do their jobs. Typically, the labor costs increase as a result of the employer being required to do that, and so the employer has a major investment in keeping people employed at will. So they're going to do everything they can to try and prevent employees from forming a union. And I think if employers are going to be successful in their effort to form a union, those who do succeed, contact a union organizer who's been involved and knows the way that this process works and kind of helps people walk through the process in a way that's most beneficial to everyone involved. Our international union has a website, gciu.org, and people can log on to that website and get all kinds of information. In addition, they can leave information and ask that someone contact them.
Mm-hmm. All right. We've covered a bit of ground here today. Was there anything else that anyone wanted to throw in?
No, I won't say proud all unions, you know what I'm saying? What I like to tell the brothers and sisters out there, if you work in any shop and there's a union there, join that union. Regardless of what it is, brake masonry, carpenter, cement finisher, hey, you need a union. Whatever you do, a union. Sweatshops is out of the door. Join a union. If any type of union is there, join that union.
And myself, I would have to just say that I am proud to be a union member, and I would hope that my family would possibly follow in my footsteps to go back into the union industry. And again, I am proud to be a union member.
I guess I would say that I'm particularly proud that our members have been able to work through their union and provide themselves with pension benefits, health and welfare benefits, provide for their families, get double time if they need to work after 10 hours in a day, and all kinds of other benefits. Although we struggle, like all working people, to maintain the things we've procured over the years, I think union members are still treated better, are compensated better, have more stable benefits, and are able to retire with an income sufficient to support themselves in their old age.
All right. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Okay. All right.